Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Coleman, sitting once again in the heart of the Klempire, Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge, with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
Wake up, man.
Got people cooling their heels here on chilling. the sofa next to us.
Yeah. Anyway, what's going on?
Not too much here.
He looks like he needs something.
Yeah, I don't know.
He needs help. He needs help.
Yeah. Everybody needs something here at Snake and Jake's. Everybody's looking for something.
And Dave will let them have it.
Oh, yeah, well.
He's a pushover.
Some people, you got to, when they ask for it, you got to let them have it.
He told me about all these guys who've been here the last year. He says they just wear you down.
Yeah.
That's what he said. That's what he told me. They just wear you down, so it's like, fine.
Yeah.
You can pass out on the floor here.
Right. Yeah, that's a new wrinkle, a new level of intimacy there. Yeah, where they really have one shoe off, one shoe on, snoring.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't bother me. I'm used to anything here.
You're used to passing out in public.
Sure, yeah. I understand.
Manny Mardi Gras.
Sure. Well, you know what that's like, too, Manny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back on Alvarado Street.
I never passed out on Alvarado Street.
Well, no, no.
I used to just hang out on Alvarado Street.
Right.
And I'd leave very quickly.
Yeah.
Hang out there for a few seconds.
Yeah, and then you could go pass out
then
somewhere.
Then I'd go somewhere else.
Right.
Which was fun.
Sure.
Good times.
Good old days. Yeah.
Yes.
So what's happening? Well, it was my birthday week this week. I'm a month ahead of you. I'm now 62 years old. Man.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. 60 doesn't even, 60 sounds old, but 62 really sounds old.
Well, because, you can't double your age and still be alive.
No.
So you're an old man.
Oh, yeah.
We're old men.
Yeah, no, I understood that. When some friend of ours, a mutual friend, said a few years ago, saying something about they were just turning 50 and they were middle-aged, I said, how old do you think you're going to be?
Yeah, you're not middle-aged.
So, yeah.
You're an old person.
So I went out to dinner with some friends. Nice meal. It's been a quiet week other than that.
Thanks for inviting me.
You wouldn't have gone anyway, Manny.
Where'd you go?
I can't even remember. Somebody else invited me. I have another friend whose birthday is a day apart from mine. He organized it.
You don't remember where you ate?
I can't remember the name of the place. I'd never been there before.
Was that good?
Place on Magazine. It was very good.
It was so good, I can't remember the name.
Is it called Lupo? Something Lupo? I don't know.
All right, well, I don't know.
Right. Doesn't ring
you
a bell.
You don't know, I don't know.
Sure.
Must have been one hell of a party, remember.
It was quite good. It's not the important part of what it's called. A rose by any other name smells just as sweet, right? That's what they say.
I don't know what that means.
Sure. In mayoral news, do you have any news? Do you go to any forums this week?
Yeah, I'm doing some forums. I can't do the show next week because I'm booked all next week.
Okay.
And probably the week after.
Okay.
I don't know about the week after, but next week I'm booked.
Okay.
So I can't do a show next week.
All right, gotcha.
It's heating up. I did see that our sheriff, Susan Hudson... I've seen signs to re-elect her. I've seen some yard signs.
You were saying that last week that you'd seen a few, and you actually saw a photo of her where she was smiling.
Yeah, she's smiling.
A rare
all the
smiling.
Way to the bank.
Okay, well, I don't know. Maybe smiling all the way to a jail cell.
Yeah, so... Yeah, and they'll probably... The lock won't work on her jail cell, probably, too.
Right. If you just kick it hard enough, it'll come open.
But there's still one of those guys out there. They still have.
Oh, right. Yeah, the Groves guy. Yeah.
He's still out there. They haven't caught him yet.
Shit, he might be in. Well, you know, the other thing is the mayor, she had her arraignment last week, and they said, do not travel out of the state without permission. Do not travel out of the country, period.
Right.
But then I saw today she went back to the judge and she's saying, can I go on vacation to Iceland?
To Iceland.
I shit you not. Now I'm not sure what the extradition situation is with Iceland, it's pretty.
But there is that U.S. Army base there,
right?
That Trump wants to annex in Greenland.
Well, that's Iceland and Greenland are different.
But, well, maybe she's looking for a way out, you know. I'm sure Putin would take her.
Well, yeah. Go join Snowden. And you've been to Iceland. Yeah. Oh, that's right. I remember you had a stop over there.
I had a stop over there.
You made it with an
Icelandic air, man.
Made it with a stewardess.
Made it with a stewardess, man. Just as layover in Iceland.
But, you know, I brought that up because I was thinking maybe the Groves, the remaining guy, might be in Iceland. He could be that far by now. Who knows, man?
You know, I have a feeling he's right here in our backyard.
Yeah, yeah. He could be across the street with those guys hanging out.
He could
out.
Be across the street. He could be the guy passed out right here.
Sure.
It could be him. You know, yeah.
Yeah, we're not checking IDs over here.
Yeah, you know, yeah. But, yeah, so that's going on. And also, the big news in the past week is the assassination.
Yes.
Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk. And it's a podcaster.
It's dividing the nation even more.
Yes, it is. As if we could be any more divided.
Exactly.
You know, I got to say, having grown up in the 60s, as did you, a decade where we saw many political assassinations, I dread returning to that kind of environment, because even as a 5-6-year-old, I felt ill at ease with the situation that we were in. You know, it felt dangerous. It felt volatile. And,
At that age, really?
Yeah. Well, you know, we had Vietnam going on. It was a lot of shit on the news. You know, my parents would let me watch all of that stuff unfiltered.
Oh, that's nice.
But
TV was the babysitter, I guess.
Well, you know, we all watched it together.
I was too busy getting high.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. With your mailman.
Yeah, with Ray the mailman.
Ray the mailman. I remember that story.
Getting high. It's in the 60s.
Right.
You know, but he was a good guy.
But yeah, he was a podcaster. I was thinking, you know, you and I could be the next targets, Manny.
They're oh, really?
Start firing at.
That's why I'm wearing this loud shirt, so people can see me.
Oh, I like that.
You know, they can see me and they say, "Fuck you, Manny."
It's got a whole gambling theme to it.
Yes. Well, you know, what they say, what stays in Vegas. You know, no, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Right, Vegas.
Yeah, exactly. So this guy gets assassinated, and I didn't really know much about this guy until I heard about him about a month or so ago. Because, you know, I work at a college campus.
Uh-huh.
And I heard about him through some students and stuff like that, and he had his whole deal. But it's, you know.
You hate to see anybody get shot like that, right?
Oh, man, I saw, because I heard about it. It came on my feed, and it immediately went to YouTube, and I saw someone posted like 20 minutes after. I saw the bullet go through.
Oh, no. Oh, man.
Yeah, it was like hours later, it was, you know, they put it.
Pixelated, or something?
Yeah, they put pixels over it. Mm-hmm. But I actually saw the video that this one kid at Utah took,
man.
And you see it go through his throat.
Oh, man. I heard other people that saw that. I have no desire to see any of that. You know, they've had for years all kind of gruesome stuff on YouTube. You know, you have ISIS videos and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I had zero interest in ever seeing any of that even for a second. You know, it's like, because some of that stuff you can't unsee. You know, once it's there in your brain, you know, as you're falling off to sleep, you see it on the inside of your eyelids.
Do you feel that way about porno? If you see like a cum shot go on a chick's face, you don't want to see that anymore?
Well, it's too late. You're going to see that forever.
That
cat's out of the bag. Well, you know, it's nothing I haven't seen before, anyhow.
Right.
So, but, you know, that kind of that
You've
level
been
of
around.
Violence, sure, you know, you know, I'm a grown man.
You know, but no, I saw it. I saw it. I saw the actual shot. And all of a sudden, you just see his head go back.
Oh, man. Oh,
back geez. Into the left.
Back into the left.
Back
it's tough.
Into the left.
Right.
The lone gunman. This was a lone gunman.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, in other news of celebrity death we had just today, did you see that?
Yes.
The great Robert Redford.
Right, Robert Redford.
Now, as an actor,
looked like he was dead for the last 20 years with that fucking skin of his.
Well, you know,
his next role was going to be Leatherface in, you know, part 4 of, you know, Halloween or whatever that movie was called. You know,
what was that called? Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, he was up for the part in part four or something.
Okay,
like that.
I bet he would have killed it too. Yeah. Well, you know, with that kind of light skin, like I have that same kind of fair skin. You know, it's the sun is tough. It's
so he moves to Colorado.
Yeah,
what an idiot.
Yeah, is it Colorado or Montana or something?
No, he moved to Colorado where he started the Sundance Film Festival.
Oh, okay.
In Colorado.
I thought that was like somewhere in, I don't know, or whatever. Okay, it's close to the sun, somewhere in the mountains. Yeah. It's very tough on the skin.
Yeah, especially, and even in the winters it's tough because that sun.
Dried out.
Yeah, sun bounces off the snow and stuff like that.
Right.
And you're a skier. You know, but he was a good guy.
He continued working all through. Now, did you catch one of this later movie that, like, the first 40 minutes is just him and there's no dialogue? I think it was called All Is Lost, where he's on a sailboat. He's sailing across, I don't know, to Bermuda or something by himself, and he has a rogue wave that breaks the mast, and you didn't see that?
That was quite good.
I really enjoyed that, man. It's a real acting tour de force.
I can't watch movies anymore.
No?
Yeah, I try. I just
have the patience for them?
Not anymore. Just like music. I can't stand music anymore.
Right.
You know? So, but I mean, I've been watching some stuff. I watched a Devo documentary.
Oh, that was really good, didn't you think?
Yeah, I thought it was good, but I think documentaries lately, especially the last 10 years, it's all about how you can stimulate the brain and stuff. It's like all these graphics and quick edits and all that kind
of. Sure.
That's not a documentary. That's just like a 2-hour music video.
Right.
If you ask me.
Well, they're all cut like that nowadays.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, I thought it was good. But I want to see documentaries where they just sit there and let the camera film, you know. But they don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
But it was a good documentary.
Yeah, and a lot of stuff I'd forgotten or didn't know in the first place, you know. You always think of Mark Mothersbaugh being like kind of the leader of the band because he...
No, Jerry was.
Yeah, Jerry. Jerry, he did all the talking.
Jerry was the man. There's that one great scene, though, because when it's towards the end of the documentary and it's like the whole band is just kind of like getting fed up with everything. They're not doing what they want to do. They're contracted to a label and stuff like that. And they're doing this interview, and all five of them are just laying down on pillows. And they're like, yeah. Can we just end this now?
Right.
Remember that scene?
Yeah.
That was it everywhere. But I saw them quite a few times in the early 80s. Devo, and one time I saw them at the Santa Monica Civic Auditorium, and they were fucking so fucking good.
Yeah.
And right in the middle of Freedom of Choice, all of a sudden you hear these big boom, boom, boom. Everyone's looking at the stage, and then you hear behind you is boom. And they had the USC marching band into the auditorium. I mean, the whole, like, 80 marching members coming to the auditorium and start doing Freedom of Choice with them.
Cool.
It was fucking cool, man.
Yeah, man.
I smoked a lot of hash that night.
Okay, that checks out.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, Robert Redford's gone. Devo's touring right now with B-52s.
Huh.
Of course, they're not going to come down here.
Right.
But I don't know why.
I would go see that show.
I'm going to see next week?
Who?
I'm going to see, he's a fucking amazing, you never would have thought this guy's an amazing singer, is David Duchovny. He's at House of Blues next week. And
I didn't even know he had a band.
He's been rocking for years, apparently.
Huh.
And I've been checking him out recently, the last couple of years, on the YouTube, and he's fucking great. So
really?
Shout out to David Duchovny from, what was that show he was
in? X-Files.
X-Files, Californication.
I actually have been rewatching the original Twin Peaks series, and towards the end of the second season, he shows up as a transgender or transvestite, actually, at the time,
really?
Just cross-dressing FBI agent who's Agent Cooper's superior. And he makes quite an attractive female, surprisingly.
He's
a good-looking guy.
You shouldn't say that.
Okay, all right.
Anyway, yeah, so I'm going to go see David Duchovny in concert. And if he's anything like Devo Live, then I'll be very happy.
Now, where is that show?
At the House of Blues.
Oh, okay.
House of Blues. And I'm going to bring my earplugs.
Yeah. Got to.
Anyway, something crazy happened today on campus. Some student organization, and I'm not going to name their name, for some reason today had a 9/11 tribute. And they had built this huge, like, kind of a huge yard sign. And they put it out in the student quad saying, remember 9/11.
Okay.
Tolerance versus terrorism. And they had this huge, it was a big, huge yard sign, but it wasn't like on sticks. It was built like on a platform. And they had like, on one side of the thing, they had the Twin Towers burning. And then the other half, the right side, they had the new memorial, you know, the new Twin Towers or whatever they call it.
Uh-huh, Freedom Tower.
Yeah, the Freedom Towers. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there during lunch, eating where I usually eat, looking over the student quad, because that's where all the girls walk by.
Yeah.
And it's when it's hot, baby, it's hot.
They got the new uniform, I noticed. It's the sports bra and the yoga pants. That's the co-ed uniform.
Yeah.
For
anyway, I'm sitting there during lunch, and this thing's about maybe 12 to 18 feet tall. And all of a sudden, just like the Twin Towers, it just collapses.
Oh, wow.
It just falls over and collapses. So I went up to the guy who, I guess, there was a guy at a table who was representing this organization, and I walked up and I said, just like 9/11, man.
Yeah.
Fell down.
Yeah.
And he looked at me like, fuck you, man.
Right, he didn't see the humor in that.
Yeah, he didn't see the humor in that.
I guess it's still too soon.
Get over it. There's 9/11 airlines now. There's an airline called 9/11.
Is there?
Yeah, I've flown it many times to New York.
Wow. Okay, yes. It's not what I'm aware of.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of getting pissed off, and then we can get to our guests.
Yes.
You know, you get these telemarketing calls or whatever, and I usually block them, but since I qualified to run for mayor, I unlocked the block because I want people who want to call me to call me.
Right.
And so now I'm getting these telemarketers also with these calls. And I don't know why I'm on, for some reason, everyone thinks I'm on Medicaid or Medicare. I'm not even 62 years old. And I get these calls, you qualify for this and this and Medicaid. So I'm like, I don't. I'm not that age yet. But anyway,
maybe
I get
they've seen a picture or something.
I don't know. But I got a call today. And usually I just look at it and go, well, fuck this, and just end the call, block it, you know. So today I decided to answer one, and this guy was asking me all these questions. And of course, it's this guy from Indonesia or India or something like that. He's not from here, even though the area code says Texas or something that.
Says his name is Jeff.
Jeff. Hello, my name is Jeff. And I want to talk to you about your new benefits and stuff like that. So anyway, and I like to fuck with these guys.
Sure.
So what happened was I was talking. I said, yes, yes, to all these questions. And they go, okay, I'm going to hand you over to my supervisor. And then the supervisor comes on. It's another guy named, you know, Jeff. He's like, hello. And then I'm fucking with him so much. I'm going, wait a minute. I already gave you that information. Why do you need that? What, you know, I just fuck. All of a sudden, I've never heard a telemarketer do this to me. Because I fuck with him a lot.
Uh-huh.
He goes, fuck you, and he hangs
up.
Oh,
wow, wow. You won.
I won. He goes, fuck you, and he just hangs up.
Oh, good for you, man. That makes my day, man. I like that. Chalk up one for Manny Chevrolet. All right.
I don't know if you ever got these calls. I used to get these calls about my Windows, you know, your Windows PC and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And I would say, my Windows are fine. I'm looking at them right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and these guys would go, No, I'm talking about your computer. No, but you're saying Windows.
Oh. See, I didn't even get it.
But anyway, let's get to our guest. Yes. He seems like a good guy.
Yeah. He's been strangely silent. I told him to laugh into the mic. He's kept the mic down in his lap. I don't know what we're supposed to hear with
bad mic etiquette.
The mic down in the lap there. But anyway, he's a... It's a guy I've been aware of for a while. He comes from South Louisiana. He's a terrific roots rock, Cajun soul singer, accordion and guitar player, songwriter, band leader. His first record, Waiting on Friday, came out in 2022. He's been playing the festival circuit around the country, and like including New Orleans Jazz Fest, French Quarter Fest, Telluride Blues Fest. Also internationally, Lucerne Blues Fest in Switzerland, On and On. His second record, Mid-City, is coming out September 26th. So it's right around the corner, actually a day after this podcast comes out. So we're going to get into all that and more. But without further ado, the great Mr. Tyron Benoit. Welcome, Tyron.
Thank you for having me.
Hey.
Yeah. Been a great show so far. I've been laughing my tail off.
Okay, well, no one would know because if you don't do it into the mic, it's as if it didn't happen.
It's bad mic etiquette.
Well, that's what it's meant to be.
Exactly.
You know, if we can make people laugh for 1 hour a week,
that's worth it.
Then they have to pay me.
Well, you know, Tyron, from the early days, we would say, you know, if you can't laugh at your problems, we can.
Yeah. Good point.
So we're providing a
and then we used to say
it's a public service.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And we used to say, find what you love and then let it kill you.
That's not the right thing. Is it? Was it?
We're doing that. We're doing that with the show. Yeah.
I don't know.
Something like that. Well, Tyron, let's get into
sure.
We know about your we're gonna find out about your career, but let's go back a little bit.
Yes.
So you're not from New Orleans.
From Houma.
From Houma.
Yep.
Now has your family been in Houma for a long time?
All
generations?
Our lives. Yep, my whole life. My grandma, grandpa.
But Houma's pretty close, right? Isn't it?
45 miles, 50 miles.
Okay,
not
so
far.
It's like an hour or so away.
Straight south. Southeast.
Yeah. Now the Benoits, are they Acadian? Came from Nova Scotia down here?
Yes. Same family line from Nova Scotia, came down here, settled down here. My mom's family, the Babin side as well, same story. Settled in South Louisiana and had been there.
Always in the Houma area?
Mostly in the Houma area. I think some of my dad's family came from a little bit further west, Louisiana, but mostly Houma area.
Okay. Well, so what was the family like? Where are you in the birth order there?
I am second in a family of five. My immediate family, my aunts and uncles, we had a huge family, large family, and family life was lively. My grandpa was a great musician. You know, Cajun culture, you had music, you had food, you had people coming over all the time. I mean, I have super fond memories of my grandpa jamming with a man by the name of Mr. Pete on fiddle and harmonica just in the kitchen drinking coffee in the morning right after breakfast.
Okay.
It was some amazing times.
What did your grandfather play?
Harmonica and fiddle.
Oh, okay. That was your grandfather.
Yeah.
Right.
He was amazing. I never realized that those sounds would download into your brain or your spirit somehow, but I kind of attribute that to my own musical journey and sort of where that sound came from.
Sure.
Especially playing an accordion. I don't think anybody chooses to play an accordion.
Yeah.
I think it picks
it chooses you.
You,
right?
Yeah, right. And I think that's just where that sound came from, because I really didn't own any Cajun records per se, but you know, it was the noise, the echo of a culture, I guess, that still follows.
Right. What kind of was there a family business? Did y'all have something down there? What was
My stepdad had an oil field business that we all worked in as we were growing up. My grandpa, his family, his side was, you know, they were pretty rural. They were pretty poor at the time, but I spent a lot of time in the oil field working pipe yards, forklifts, that type of stuff.
Okay. Oil patch.
That's kind of what took over Houma. When the oil patch moved in, the fishermen moved out, and it's been that way ever since.
Yeah.
Not that it's a bad thing, because there's an actual industry down there.
Right.
And it's a livelihood for the majority of Houma,
right,
and South Louisiana.
Sure.
So you said, how many siblings do you have?
I have three brothers and a sister.
Okay. All right. So five.
Five of us.
And you went to school?
I went to military school high school.
Really?
For high school?
Yes. I went to the Marine Military Academy in Harlingen, Texas.
Huh. Now, why did that happen?
You know, that's a weird thing. I guess I was fairly ambitious when I was younger, and I just kind of saw my friends sort of revolving in the same patterns that their family was in.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know.
Those patterns weren't good.
Well, there was a lot of alcoholism. There was a lot of, you know, a lot of things that you could see that.
Yeah.
I just
oil does.
I think I was thinking more for myself. You know, like, how am I going to step away from this?
Broaden your horizons.
Yes.
Exactly.
So believe it or not, when I was 15 years old, I actually called the Naval Academy and said, "Hey, how do you get into school?" I was just ignorant to the fact that nobody calls the Naval Academy and says, hey, how do you get into your
school? Well, you did, so you got through. They must have a line, huh? What'd they say?
You know, the person that I spoke to, I remember the conversation. They said that this particular school puts more cadets into the Naval Academy than any other school in the country. And so I pursued going there.
Okay. And now, how did you find that? How did you like it, is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I did great there. I graduated top 10 of my class.
Wow.
I thrived in that environment. I did very well.
You like the discipline, the
I think it was an opportunity for me to grow up with, there were no parents around.
Mm-hmm.
It was a complete military setting, and you can find yourself in some pressured
situations.
And
your family was good with it?
Yeah.
They just wanted to get you out of the house.
You know, there was four boys at the house. We were not always, you know, maybe some of us deserved a little military school.
Yeah.
Let me just say that, right?
Sure. Yeah. I got you. Yeah.
But yeah, I did well there. And
now, were you playing music at this point?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. A lot of sports. I was in boxing, you know, just very competitive. And the short of it is that I actually got the Naval Academy, the interest in Naval Academy, what do you call it, the prep school invitation.
Uh-huh.
And I wind up not going because I picked up a redshirt scholarship to play football at Tulane. And I hadn't seen my mom in so many years. It was like being in the military. I mean, I was going home every once in a while for vacations, for Christmas and that, and it's and that. But, I mean, it was still basically like being away, military life. So I chose to go to Tulane for 1 year and played football. I was a defensive back, free safety.
What year?
1989.
Okay.
I could almost tell you the coach, Davis.
All right, cool. Manny won. No, he wasn't
here. I lived
in
L.A. in 19. I'm from Los Angeles.
There you go.
I was from Los Angeles.
So, yeah, the funny thing is I went to Tulane and hated it and wind up enlisting in the Marines.
Oh, wow.
Which totally pissed my parents off.
Oh,
because
wow.
I was coming home to hang out and be home. And then all of a sudden, I'd say about after my first year, it was a full year that I'd spent in school, and I wound up joining the Marines, and that subsequently led to service in Desert Storm for 18 months.
Oh, right.
Wow.
And the whole thing, yeah.
My brother was in Desert Storm.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was an Army guy. He was one of those guys who loved the discipline.
Yes.
You know, because he hated high school. But he was a really good athlete in high school. He was being recruited.
Yeah.
But he also liked to smoke pot.
Ah.
So he got kicked out of high school for smoking too much pot. I think that's the story. But then he joined the Army, and fuck, man, he just became just a career guy, and he loved it. And he did that. He did Desert Storm.
I enjoyed it. I mean, I don't regret it at all. If I had to do it again, I would.
He just
no
didn't
doubt.
Like because whether he was stationed, you couldn't drink alcohol.
Wow.
It was near beer. It was that near beer.
Where was that at? Like Middle East or something?
Yeah. Riyadh or something?
Yeah, yeah, that's got to be.
In Saudi Arabia?
Yeah. That's got to be one of those places.
Yeah. But he says if you drank enough of them, you would you would get a buzz. If you drank enough of them, you would feel that you were getting a buzz.
Oh,
a funny anecdotal story. Uh-huh. When we were in the desert, there was no alcohol. They would monitor your mail. They would, you know, redact your mail if it had a picture of a female. I mean,
right.
they would actually redact your letters.
Oh, yeah. So it didn't have anything sexual in it?
Nothing. So I would tell people to, you know, just don't write. But the anecdotal story, I met up with some British Special Forces guys that had a line on logistics things they could get. They could get things.
Uh-huh.
And we wound up, once this whole, the combat had settled down and we were just on patrols at that time, they were rotating people back to what was called Wally World. And it was a ship that everybody got to go kind of party on.
R&R.
A little R&R.
Uh-huh.
But there was no alcohol, right?
Still.
There was girls. Three of them.
Three of them for 800 soldiers.
But there was no alcohol. But these British Special Forces guys, I remember we were standing in this room and they'd go remove the ceiling. There's a ceiling tile. They moved the ceiling. And they had what looked like regular hydrogen peroxide bottles. Labels, everything, the tops, all of it done. I mean, just like
vodka.
It was apple booze that they were having fermented and then distilled in the Philippines,
like white lightning
through their connection. Wow. And having it shipped in Hagenbrock. True story.
Wow. Crazy.
So yeah, you drink a half a bottle of that and you're shit faced because you haven't had alcohol in 18 months.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So
we never got to see the three girls though.
Right, right.
they said there were girls. I'm sure there was no just girl.
They were busy.
Rumor. Well, the British like to dress up and drag though.
Right.
So maybe
they like to fight
it.
Too. I don't know. They had a thing about just fighting. I don't know. It was weird.
Yeah, they don't have
they
guns over there.
They thought it was just
there,
sport, but you know, like to just go fist
stab each
cuff.
Other.
Yeah,
with broken bottles. Well, so
it was fun.
So you were actually in a the Marines. You in. Combat
yes.
There?
Yes, 3rd Battalion, 23rd Marines. I was a part of State Platoon. We wound up right there at, I forgot what they call it, you know, the hook and the push or whatever, but we wound up right there on the border traveling north.
Schwarzkopf.
With the 8th Marine Division.
General Schwarzkopf.
That was Saddam Hussein, right?
That's correct.
Yeah,
that's correct.
Yeah,
that's correct.
They found him in a bunker or something.
Well, no, that was before that. That was when they invaded Kuwait.
And they were trying
to kick him, get the...
This was the Kuwaiti invasion.
Yeah, we stopped short of going to Baghdad. That was Bush 1, and we decided, well, we don't want to go all the way to Baghdad because then we'll own the problem. So we just...
Waited for the sequel to come out.
Right, right.
Right. Okay.
So how long were you in the Marines there for?
I was there in country or just total?
Or just total. How long was
6 years. Six and a half years.
Okay. Well, that's a pretty long stretch, huh?
That's a long stretch, and you did two inactive, and that's it. That's your 8 years.
Now, so that's what you signed up for?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So did you consider making a career of it beyond that?
You know, that's another funny story. We came back, and I don't want to get too far off.
Sure,
of it,
yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
I had a friend of mine, one of our good friends that were with us, that was one of the ATF agents that got shot in the neck at Waco.
Oh man!
And so it was a weird situation because we came home, we lived through this mess, and then one of my best friends gets killed in Waco. And so that sent me on the tailspin. It's like, okay, I think I'm done with this.
So you decide, well, I'm going to return to civilian life. What's in your mind that you're thinking you wanted to do?
You know, that's funny. That's right about the same time that I fell in love with my wife. Well, I met my wife now 30 years ago. Hmm. And she was the one that encouraged me to start modeling, acting, getting into the arts.
Huh, okay.
And that's really where it started. We moved to New York City. I was studying acting up there. I was doing some modeling, but that was not that was long before the whole movement thing, and it was just not my thing. But that's also the time that I started playing music. I wound up buying a Telecaster on one of the old vintage guitar shops on 56 and 6, I think it's.
Okay.
And that was my first guitar.
You met your wife in the military?
No, I met her right after. Thank God.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank God.
In Houma?
Nope. Here, I was living in New Orleans at the time.
Oh.
So, New Orleans girl?
She's actually a Florida girl living in New Orleans. She's from Fort Walton area.
Oh, all right.
Hello, Michelle, if you're listening will be listening.
Shout out to Michelle.
Shout out to Michelle.
So y'all moved up there to pursue acting. Were you studying anywhere that we know of?
Actors Conservatory.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, with Elaine Aiken. She was unbelievable. I mean, that was another just a wild experience. Elaine Aiken was classmates with Marlon Brando, mm-hmm. with James Dean, with all of these people. And in order to pay for the school, I kind of volunteered to help around the office, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And she gave me a job of transposing like half-inch tape to like an electronic recorder, almost like.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it was disc back then, but it was something more modern than the tape.
Right.
And I had to sit through all of these tapes of all of these people being taught by, what's his name?
Right, right. Who was that?
The method acting king.
Yeah. Oh, the guy from the Godfather films. What's his name? Oh, God.
Lee Strasberg.
Strasberg. I'm glad you came up because our listeners are screaming at us.
It was coming. My random access memory doesn't work
that
good anymore.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool, man. You're part of that tradition. And,
it was an amazing experience. She was an amazing lady. I mean, just the pedigree alone of being in that class was worth the time being there.
Now, did you get any work after that?
You know,
work as an actor?
New York. I will say New York kind of took a toll on me. I mean, I was a bayou guy, and right. I'm living in this big city, and, you know, after the first year, you realize your stuff is still there, and the hype sort of wears off. The honeymoon's over, and you're still there. And so I think just living in that environment started to take a toll on me. So what was crazy was, you know, you have to put time in and do work, and as we're doing the work, we're in about 3 years living into New York, and now all of a sudden work is coming, and I'm starting to get all this type of, they call it off Broadway, but it's like real theater work. It's like people writing pieces and you're going to act them out,
right?
And that had like a cult following. You know, it was like gigs.
Mm-hmm, sure.
It was like having gigs. And all of that was just starting to show up, and we decided to leave.
But you were done with it. You're like,
I don't care. Like, I can't do it anymore.
Wow.
You have a day off, and you go to, what is it, City Park, and you just want to be, you know, like without a few hundred million people, uh-huh. And there's still 50,000 people that are still there too. So I don't know. It just kind of took a toll on me.
So, but you don't, so you don't regret? I mean,
zero regret. I love New York. It was a great experience.
But I mean, what if you would have gotten that big part on Broadway?
I became a superstar. I don't know. I couldn't say.
Yeah,
would I still be? Probably. I mean, I learned how to suck it up in the Marine Corps, so I could have sucked it up.
Okay, yeah. Right.
I could have sucked it up.
Yeah.
Right.
But there was nothing to suck up, so we left.
Okay.
So you weren't that good.
Well, maybe not. Okay, let's get to it. Maybe not.
We'll never know. We'll never. Well, so were you starting to do some songwriting at this point?
Yeah. It was, my younger brother was living in Colorado. He had just started playing bass guitar. And we would get on the phone and start like, oh, this is G, just mapping out the fretboard and working on different melodies over the phone. Fast forward that 3 years to we're ready to leave New York, and instead of coming back here, we went to the Denver area and started playing music with my little brother. His name's Tate. Yep. And the first iteration of the band we put together was T. Benoit and the Shuckers. But at that time, my older brother Tab had sort of, his name was already coming around.
Right, Tab Benoit.
That's
correct. Famous blues guitar player. Yes. Your older brother,
quite accomplished in his own right.
Sure.
So his name was getting a little screwed up with ours, so we changed the name of the band to Two Fish, and we went on touring professionally. I wound up touring for about 6 years out of Denver.
Huh, okay.
Did very well.
Where were y'all playing? Just Colorado area?
Yeah, we were based out of Colorado.
Steamboat Springs.
Touring the whole
Robert
country,
Redford's
but
house?
Out of Colorado. We were touring, not Robert Redford.
No.
We missed that one.
Okay.
I don't think he was there yet, or maybe he was.
Yeah, he's been there since
it's too
the
late
80s.
Now.
Eighties, yeah.
But we were doing nationwide. We we were doing well for ourselves back then.
What kind of material were y'all playing?
Kind of the same thing, maybe a little bit closer to blues rock, just because of Tab's influence, and you know, at that time he was sort of paving the way and giving us the model to follow.
Uh-huh.
But the songwriting was continuous, you know. I was writing all the material, and my brother and I were putting it together musically. And I don't know, the sound started to change towards the end of that tenure, sounding more kind of where I am now. But yeah, it was about the same.
Okay, well,
maybe not as developed.
There's a lot of work in, like, the Iguanas had a Colorado connection because the two singers in the band lived in Fort Collins and actually met there. And it was the Subdudes who were living there already who said, you know, you guys should move to New Orleans, which is how they wound up coming here and starting the Iguanas in New Orleans. But so I've been up there and played a lot of that circuit, those summertime things where they have all everywhere there's a ski lift or something. In the summertime, they have concerts out on those slopes, you know.
They'll put bands right there at the bottom of the slope sometimes.
Right. So, and there's a lot of those smaller towns that they have a series where bands play in two, three times a week, you know.
Yeah.
And so you can do a lot of work without going very far.
Very much so. And you know, there's a lot of synergy between Colorado and here. I don't know why. It's tangible. You can see it. And,
yeah.
They love us up there. I mean, they love all Louisiana artists.
It's true.
You can go up there and really do well.
Yeah, they bring a ton of Louisiana, all kind of different roots.
All the time.
Stuff,
all the time. We played, I think we played in Colorado this past year, maybe six different times.
Oh, nice.
Six different trips to Colorado.
Nice, nice. Well, Manny, this is I'm loving the story so far, but it seems like about that time, huh?
All right, tell the people. We're going to take a break. The Troubled Nation knows what to do. We'll be right back.
Rolling hills and falling leaves, morning chills and empty trees, reminding me of other things I'm trying to think. Riding miles in a passenger seat, two-way conversation on a one-way street, talking words but other things, yeah, I'm trying to think. Still cutting cold feet with two socks on, arms wrapped around me and I'm trying to hold on to what she said, it won't be long, keep holding on. Oh, it's raining in Kentucky and I just want to get back home. It's raining in Kentucky, I'm a million miles from home. Never been so lucky, never been so
back.
Yes.
Back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet.
That's me.
I am Renee Coleman.
You are.
Back with our guest, Mr. Tyron Benoit.
That's me.
Now, Tyron, I know you're kind of new to the podcast, but our handfuls of listeners are familiar with the operation of this podcast and that we are a listener-supported podcast.
Yes.
We don't have any corporate sponsorship. Not that we would turn it down, but this hasn't happened for us yet. But we do have the PayPal and the Venmo links in the show notes of every show, as well as the Facebook posts that we make about the show. And our devoted listeners will contribute to, they'll buy us cocktails, they'll pay for our hosting service, the notebooks we use. You see, we're very analog here. We have ink pens and composition books. And stickers. And here, let me present you with
a
few Troubled Men podcast stickers. I often forget, but here we are. I remember
love
this
stickers.
Time. Have one to stick and one to save. So avail yourself. We don't have anyone to thank this week because we didn't get any support except for our Patreon page, our patrons that are supporting us week in and week out. We have the links there in the show notes as well for the Patreon page, and as well as the Troubled Men podcast t-shirts. And
yes.
I wouldn't wait on those if you're going to give them out for Christmas or some other gift-giving occasion. I would jump right on that.
Also, I want to just say to the few listeners who sent money for my campaign and I sent them a bumper sticker and some stickers, could they confirm that they received them?
Oh, okay.
Because I don't know if they received them. Okay. You know how the mail is. Today.
Sure. Oh, yeah. It's very sketchy since the first Trump administration.
So, yeah. Well, yeah. Definitely. Yes.
But drop us a line. Drop us a message or something. Yeah, say that you got
you received the bumper sticker. And that'll make me, because there was that guy who gave $20 a few weeks ago.
Yeah, Ryan O was one guy.
Well, Ryan O's hasn't gone out
yet. Okay, Eddie V.
Eddie V, can you just text us or tell us if you received it or not?
Okay, I'm
Postal Service is crazy.
Yeah. I'm in contact.
But they're hiring, apparently.
It's a serious campaign.
I just got an email from LinkedIn saying that the Postal Service in your area is hiring.
It might be time for me to make a career change.
Yeah, I don't mind walking around places.
Yeah, nowadays.
I walk around my room every night.
Sure.
My wife says, "When are you coming to bed?" I said, "I'm not done." Anyway.
You got to walk it off.
I got to walk it off, man. Exactly.
Because
I got my Fitbit.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
I do. I average around 10,000 steps a day.
Yeah, you're doing a lot of walking over there at the bookstore.
Well, it's about 1,000 steps just to get to the place.
Holy moly. You know? All right, well, anybody else wants to contribute to Manny's campaign, you can send it to one of those links with a special note, and we will forward it to him. And
you can mail a check or cash to Snake and Jake's.
Yeah, we have the, you know, Snake and Jake's, we do love getting mail at the bar.
Because this is my campaign headquarters.
7612 Oak Street, 70118, New Orleans, Louisiana.
Right.
Also, what else? Follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it. And I have a few gigs coming up here. As always, the Iguana's continuing our Sunday residency at the Carousel Bar, 7 to 10, Hotel Monteleon every Sunday. It's been going great guns. And have some Loose Cattle gigs up in the Virginia, Durham area.
Very nice.
What is that? And then that's culminating with an appearance at the Mountain Stage radio program on September 28th, the end of this month. Great nationally syndicated radio program, and we'll be playing on with the Baseball Project, which is Peter Buck and Mike Mills from REM, and some other luminaries there, and I think
Fantastic.
Bob Mould is on that. And also have a record that I played on maybe last year that just came out on Friday. It's a Tav Falco record. You know, I played in the Panther Burns in very early part of my career. It's the way I got out of music school. It was actually the antidote to music school. It's the antidote I needed, you know, getting some fractured, primitive, minimalist tango rockabilly music.
Wow.
And he recorded a record that's has all kind of people, Kid Congo Powers from the Cramps and Gun Club, Ann Magnuson from Bongwater, Reverend Horton Heat is on it, John Spencer, Chris Spedding, on and on and on. But anyway, check that out. It's called Desire on Ice by Tav Falco. And also the Loose Cattle record EP came out, which is called Unholy Rollers, came out on Friday as well, so check that out. And it seems like enough of that. I'm leaving something out, but...
How many bands are you in, Renee?
You know, I try not to count, but... I
don't want to list them all?
I am...
run out of time, I think.
I am very, very fortunate, and you know, it's I mentioned I was on WWOZ today talking about the Tribe Nunzio gig that we're doing on Friday, and the guy was asking me...
But he's only one boss in one of the bands.
Well,
he's an employee with all the other bands.
Well, yes, Manny's always asking about, well, who runs who? Or if I say my band, he's like, well, is it your band? And I say, well, it's my band, like this, the United States is my country. I don't own it, but I affiliate with it, you know?
He has a vote.
I do have a vote.
He has a vote.
I have a vote. Yeah, they respect my opinion, or at least they listen to my opinion, and more than they should, actually. Because, you know,
Country's dying.
Yeah, we're all
just
dying.
Just like a lot of your bands are dying.
We're all dying, Manny. It's a one-way street. It's only going in one direction here for all of us, but we're hanging on. Anyway, that's enough of that. Let's get back to our guest, Mr. Tyron Benoit.
Uh-oh.
So Tyron, we last left you in Colorado working on the chrysalis of your musical group, the formation of it, the beginning of it.
Yep.
Then you come back to New Orleans. Is that like the early 2000s or so? You come back here.
Yeah,
and
we came back because of family issues. My wife's mom had gotten ill, and you know, sometimes you got to be where you need to be instead of where you want to be. And there was just a calling for us to come back and try to help remedy or affect that situation that was happening.
Healthcare is number one here in New Orleans, right?
Well, so that's why family's number one.
Family's number one. Okay. I would agree to that. Healthcare, I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
So how long did she last? A couple days before?
No,
she actually
lasted 2 years by the time we came back.
Right,
she died the year right before Katrina.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it was a big move because we had come back for family. She had passed away. Then we got hit with Katrina. Then subsequently Rita. And it was like, okay, are we supposed to be here? Where are we supposed to be right now? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a time where I thought, if there's ever a time that you want to be a part of something, it's a part of, you know, the rebuilding of New Orleans. And so we decided to stay here. We could have easily gone back to Colorado because we had some deep roots there. Mm-hmm. But we stayed here, and it was a good thing that we made that choice, because not long after that, my dad had gotten in an accident, and I was available mm-hmm. to help my family as well. So I went through a period of family tragedies, issues, whatever you want to call it.
Obligations.
Of about 10 years, and I'm very thankful for that time, too, to be available to help. And what was crazy was, as those things started to remedy themselves, you know, music kept coming back.
Okay.
And that's how this, you know, that's how I hit the accelerator again.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you decided, you made a decision, we're going to continue, we're going to double down on the music career, and just going to develop it here.
It started to come to me.
Okay.
I mean, people started asking me to come out and play again. I started writing again, and the more I put it out there, I was getting the positive response back. It was just, it continually kept opening doors for me.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Now, so you're playing around New Orleans, you're meeting people, starting to work. I know at one point you somehow got into Monk Boudreau's, Monk Boudreau's band.
Yeah, I actually got to start playing with Monk and wound up being the band leader for Monk's band for about 3 years.
Now, how did that happen?
Probably through Reuben Williams, Tab, and giving me the opportunity to start playing out and introducing me to different groups.
Reuben is Tab's.
Reuben Williams is Tab's manager, Thunderbird Management.
And also Big Chief Monk Boudreau's
manager. And also
manager.
Big Chief.
Okay.
And also a longtime friend. I mean, we all grew up together. I mean,
okay, y'all kind of grew up in the same area.
Yeah, we love each other like brothers.
All right.
We're all family. So it was an opportunity that he gave me to start branching out into the scene, and you know, give me the opportunity to, you know, lead Monk's band for about 3 years. It was amazing.
I'm sure you met so many New Orleans musicians.
Mike Dusson, Josh Garrett. I mean, all of them, right? Susan Calso.
Sure.
I think I kind of met you through that whole.
Okay.
I mean, it was later on, but that's still the same. The same group.
Right. Now, I don't know, maybe 18 months ago or something, I got a call from you, and you were asking me about bass players, or asking me, you know, inquiring, did I have time in my schedule or something? I didn't. I couldn't take it on, but I said, call this guy, and it was Scott Morrison.
You should.
And he wound up working out great with y'all.
Scott has been fantastic.
He's been in the band since then.
He can sing. He's a killer worker. His work ethic is unbelievable. We get along in the van,
right?
Which is 90% of it.
Sure.
But Scott is, you know, he's one of us now. He's
nice.
He's no longer Scott Morrison. He's now Scotty Beaudoin.
Oh, okay.
We converted him.
Okay, gave him a Cajun name.
He is now Scotty Beaudoin.
That's funny.
Yeah. It's
hilarious. Well, so, and you have couple of other great guys in the band, the guitar player Randy Ellis
from Shoepick, Louisiana.
Played with Chubby Carrier
for
I
don't even know how long he's played with Chubby. I mean, and Randy's also been a longtime friend. I mean, I've been knowing Randy for 30 years, at least 30 years, maybe more.
Now, Randy, I look at Randy's picture and I think Randy must be about 25 years old. Now, I know Randy's in his 40s.
Have one gray hair.
But
what's up with that?
He's definitely maintaining his boyish charm. That's a blessing. And then you have on drums, Stephen Randall.
Stephen is
who played with all kinds of people, man.
Yes,
played with Mamu.
I met him playing with Monk.
Okay.
He was on the Jazz Fest group that was playing 1 year for I don't remember what year at Jazz Fest when we were with Monk Boudreau, but Stephen Randall was on the drums that year, and that's where I met him, and we've been friends ever since. And when this iteration of, you know, Tyron, I guess, started to take shape, these are the guys that I called and wound up, you know, developing this sound with. They're great.
So you put out the first record under your name a couple of years ago, three years ago. And was that some of the same guys on the band?
No, okay. It was all studio guys. It was the same guys, though. It's like there's a different group for the studio as well. Doug Belote, I know you know.
Doug Belote,
and
former
Shane
guest.
Terrio.
Shane Terrio, I mean, great guitar player.
Those are the guys that are on both of these records for the studio stuff. And it wasn't necessarily a choice. It was more of availability at the time.
Right.
I'm one of these guys that, you know, if I have time off, I don't like to waste it. Mm-hmm. And when we had time off from our touring schedule, I was always constantly putting myself in the studio. I just came from the studio today with another group that I'm working with.
Oh, okay.
Do you have any kids?
Two.
Yeah.
Girls. An 18-year-old girl.
Oh, wow.
Just entered college. She's at Loyola this year. Her name's Manassa. And a 13-year-old, Mara, at Chappelle. Mara and Manassa.
Okay.
Two beautiful. I'm in the all girls club.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
You too?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a different thing too. We could do a whole different podcast on just being in the all girls club.
Yeah.
A dad.
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe I won't produce that podcast.
But we'll come back for that one, Manny, if you want to. Yeah. Maybe if I.
Now the producer on this new record, which, as I said, is coming out on the 26th of September, Mid-City is the title of the record. It's coming out a day after this podcast comes out. The producer on this record is Donald Markowitz.
Correct.
Now, his name came up. I can't remember what artist, what guest it was, but, I mean, with maybe like three shows ago, he came up.
That's amazing.
And he's the guy who... wrote Time of My Life, the
100%.
Huge hit from Dirty Dancing, and has had a huge career. He's an Oscar-winning composer, and
he's,
you know,
his career is unbelievable. He's got an Oscar, he's got a Golden Globe, he's got Grammy nominations. He's worked with some of the top 1% in the film industry doing scores.
Right.
He's a really good friend of mine. And the amazing thing is he's got over 1 billion streams.
Yeah.
1 billion on Spotify.
Right.
I mean, that's just an amazing feat in itself.
Sure.
But I love working with Donnie. I mean, he's become just a true, true tight friend. And we have... our work method is amazing together. I can't say enough about him.
And I think that Don Markowitz was either the producer, director, somehow involved in Doug Belote's documentary that he did.
That's correct.
About New Orleans drumming, Street Beat.
Did you see that? It was pretty amazing.
I did see it. Yeah, yeah. And we actually had, the first time Doug was on the podcast, they were in the middle of making that thing. And then we had him on again when it came out.
Yeah, and what a collection of artists that we've lost that I don't think they knew that they were going to have a time capsule on their hands. And, man, it's a...
Doug Belote does one of the worst Trump impersonations I've ever heard.
he does...
But he loves doing impersonations.
I know he does.
He does great impersonations.
So I hope Doug doesn't hear this tonight.
He does great impersonations.
Because Doug loves doing
impersonations. I know, but he wanted to do it on the second time he was on.
You didn't like it?
Yeah, he didn't hit the mark.
He does so many good impersonations of New Orleans musicians, though. I've never seen him do one of me. But
I'm not going to name the people that he's great at doing impressions of because I'm so close to him.
Well, he's great at like Stanton Moore. He does a great Stanton Moore. He does a great Johnny Vodakovich.
He's unbelievable.
And he can even imitate drummers behind the kit.
I know.
And imitate their playing.
It's amazing.
And
I love Doug.
Yeah, no. And
great character.
He's definitely a piece of work. So this new record, how would you contrast it to your previous record?
I think this record was about. I followed the Tom Petty method. If you can play it on an acoustic guitar, then it's a real song. And I think the first record I went at it like you do with everyone's first record, a little too fast, maybe. Right, a little in haste of trying to just get a sound out there.
Uh-huh.
I was just getting back into the music scene, industry, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And you needed a record to sort of, you know, solidify yourself. This record, we took our time. The songs that I wrote, I'm really fond of the songs that I wrote. You know, we have some really good songs on there. And the methodology that I pursued for this record. I mean, there's just a lot of heart in there. There's a lot of heart.
I thought the Tom Petty method was lots of painkillers and just winging.
Well, I wasn't going to say that on the podcast because my wife is going to be listening.
Okay. But your kids won't.
Maybe in 10 years. Who knows?
And you've already put out a couple of singles, Raining in Kentucky and Louisiana Time.
We're already on like six FM stations without, you know, I mean, and you're talking about grassroots. There's no money behind this record. I mean, when you put out a record, you know, I mean, there's no such thing as label support
these
anymore.
These days, yeah.
So it's all DIY, right?
Right.
And for us to be...
What does that mean, DIY?
Do it yourself. Do it yourself.
Yeah, that's it.
I think I got that right.
Well, now...
A couple more tequilas.
Sure.
Now, when you talk about, you know, the Marines teaching you to suck it up, that is really good. That's a good skill for the music business.
These days, 100%. Yeah. I didn't realize that skill set was going to contribute to my music career.
Oh, yeah. No, we're sucking it up more than ever.
But we're getting some airplay. You know, that's kind of exciting. I mean, you see people enthusiastic about the songs. They want to hear the songs. I see a lot of fans asking for the songs when we show up. So people seem to be listening. And, I mean, I think in today's world, that's all you can really hope for is to just be heard, right? To try to break through to chatter.
Sure. And to get booked and to go. And I see these videos of you playing in front of huge crowds and the people are very enthusiastic. So,
yes,
crowds
have been, you know, we have a great message. What is that? Our message is love.
Oh, okay.
Our message is togetherness. Our message is, you know, forget about all that other shit. It's about this. It's just about being together.
And how's that going for you?
It's going great.
The love and togetherness.
It's going great.
Right on.
I think, believe it or not, I mean, and this is from my experience, everywhere we go, everybody's the same. We don't really find dividing conflicts, or maybe this is just a scenario where we are. Maybe it's the platform.
Because they're on acid, most of them?
No, not necessarily. Mushrooms.
Mushrooms.
It's the same thing.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't last as long.
Mushrooms are a little bit more natural.
No. Yeah. More or less
and
the
you're
same.
More not, you're less likely to have a freak out on mushrooms.
And it's not 14 hours later, you know?
Yeah.
Sure.
You can still go to Denny's.
Okay.
But you can't look in the mirror on either one.
No. Don't look in the mirror. It's no good.
Don't look in the mirror.
Only for a small moment.
No,
yeah, don't get caught up. Don't get caught up.
And while you're taking a leak, don't look at your dick.
Okay.
Yeah. Do not.
Definitely don't do that.
Because it'll freak you out.
Definitely don't look at anybody else.
You'll never look at it the same again.
Exactly.
Don't be a pecker checker in the bathroom.
Are there a lot of people on shrooms at your gigs?
Not always.
Yeah, he's not taking a survey.
Yeah, not yet.
Okay.
Not always.
Well, you should ask him. Do it for me. Next time you're live at a big festival, say, how many people are on mushrooms?
Show I'm going to do it.
Show of hands.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to take a survey.
Yeah, okay. Just do it and get back to me.
Show a survey. Okay. I'll come back. Right. That's going to be the subject. That's going to be part two of the TV.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Part two.
I got some information
because
to
Mick
bring back.
Jagger, I saw this interview with him a few years ago. He said... I think there's still a lot of sex in rock and roll. You know, sexuality is always there. And he says, I think a lot of people in the stands are getting high, you know, and rock and roll, you got to deliver, you know, and that's true.
He could be right.
Yeah, he knows a thing or two about rock and roll.
He said that from his wheelchair. Yeah, a wheelchair.
As he was
some
rolling
something,
out.
Yeah, something on his nose and
yeah,
stuff
a
like
oxygen
that.
Oxygen bottle turning the valve.
Yeah, exactly.
But he just uses the wheelchair for respect. Like you know, he doesn't really need it. He can walk around. He just likes it for the convenience.
How do you know that?
I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. You played the halftime. Was that at the Pelicans basketball game?
Dude, that was my favorite gig so far.
Now, how did that happen?
You know, we got invited.
Okay.
We got a call. I mean, I
just fans. You know?
Who were they playing?
The Pelicans?
Yeah. So you did the halftime show?
We did the halftime show.
Okay, not the national anthem.
I wasn't paying attention to the freaking
right?
You know, I wouldn't pay attention.
You didn't watch the game at all?
I'm about to go play in front of 25,000 people with a squeeze
box. Not at
the
Pelicans right, game. Right, there's not 25,000 people.
Well,
2,500 people.
Yeah, maybe 2,500 people. Right, right. Pelicans suck.
Well, you know. Still a nice gig to go play on the floor of a
friend of mine.
It's an arena gig.
Right?
A friend of mine just sung the national anthem at a Clippers game in L.A., and he forgot the words.
Really?
Oh, no.
Who's that?
Bob Forrest.
Oh, really? Oh. Bob? Yeah. Wow, Bob Forrest got invited to go sing the
national
anthem?
Somehow he got the gig, yeah. Somehow he got the gig.
I would like to see it.
And it was military night.
Oh, man. I'm sure.
And he forgot the words to the national anthem during military. And there were some sailors who wanted to kick his ass during halftime.
I bet it was all of them.
Did
he make it
big
to the car
Clippers
that night?
Back in the 80s were like, 200 people showed up.
Okay.
You know.
It was just recently, you're saying, huh?
No, back in the 80s.
Sorry. I haven't spoken to Bob since that night,
in fact.
Yeah.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
anyway,
yeah.
You're playing the Pelicans.
How much
did you score?
We scored.
Big time.
We won that night.
Yeah.
We won.
The Pelicans didn't, but you guys did.
We won.
There you go.
I actually think the Pelicans won that night, which made it a little better.
Rare occurrence.
You know, to play an arena is kind of cool. I mean, it's...
Right? It
it's
felt
kinda,
good? It felt natural?
The guy was telling us about the sound in there because it's an arena and it's bouncing everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And you have no backline. It's running through the house.
Oh, you didn't have monitors?
Yeah, you have in-ears.
Oh, okay.
But and they warned us, hey, don't take the in-ears out because all you're going to hear is the echo.
You're going to hear something that's 2 seconds behind where you are.
Dude, I wanted to hear the echo.
Yeah.
I took them things out.
Really?
I wanted to hear the roar in the freaking stadium. Yeah, it was awesome.
The Smoothie King Center.
Yeah,
Smoothie King Center.
Yeah.
Can I tell you a little crazy piece of that story?
Yeah, please do. Yeah, yeah.
It's up on the Pelican side, unbeknownst to me, I didn't know he had season tickets, is Donnie Markowitz.
Oh, okay.
And he's getting up to go get a hot dog or a pretzel with his wife, and he says there's this little band about to come on, and he's like, oh, there's a band tonight. Maybe I'll listen. And it was Tyron. It was one of his artists. He's like, what the hell's going on?
Okay,
he had no idea.
Okay.
He had no idea. It's pretty cool.
He gave you the thumbs up.
Yeah, he thought it was great.
Nice.
He thought it was great.
Well, Tyron, we're kind of on the downslope of the podcast here, just wrapping up.
That's a shame. I was just getting warmed up.
Well, yeah, we all are. But man, he's got to go to work tomorrow.
I got to be up at 6 a.m.
Yeah, he gets up early. Sometimes he texts me at 4:30 a.m.
Yes.
It doesn't bother me. It's fine. But you have some upcoming shows. Well, one thing.
Come on, can we announce it?
Yes, we have an Iguana show. We have a Iguanas and Tyron Benoit show, Double Bill, coming up at Chickiwawa on December 18th.
Please come out.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't wait. We've been wanting to do a show with y'all for.
Can you put me on the guest list?
Yes, we'll put you on plus nine.
He won't show up.
I'll put you plus four, and they'll handle the other five.
Okay.
Is that fair?
December
18th.
December 18th.
I'm busy that night.
Yeah, yeah. You see, there you go.
I want to say before we get off, and I wasn't paid. Renee is absolutely one of my most favorite bass players.
Oh.
It's just a fact.
But you only know two, right?
I know about six.
Okay.
And Scott Morrison doesn't count. My brother's the other one, so it's down to four. But Renee, you're at the top of that.
You never
six.
Heard me play bass.
All right.
Well, yeah.
But no, truthfully, Renee, you're a great artist, and we look forward to the Iguana show so much. We've been wanting to do this for a while, and I'm very thankful it came together.
Yeah, I'm so glad we're able to pull all that together. Yeah, but you have some other shows coming up before that. You're playing at the Bayou Arts Festival in Houma. On October 11th,
That's correct. You're playing
the next day here at the Crescent City Blues and Barbecue Fest, October 12th.
That's correct.
And everybody look for Tyron Benoit and his new record, Mid-City, coming out on September 26th.
Do you live in Mid-City?
No, that's where I recorded it.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Mid-City Studio. I'm not familiar with that.
That's Markowitz's studio.
Oh, okay. It's like his private
little
studio.
Domain, and okay. It's what we captured in that moment at that place, and that's why it was the right time.
Yeah, no, I like the cover of the record. It's kind of an homage to Subterranean Homesick Blues. You're standing there holding a handwritten sign that says 100%. Mid-City.
100%. You're giving it away,
on.
Renee. You're giving the secret away, Renee.
Well,
you're giving the secrets away.
Oh,
here
sorry.
On Troubled Men Podcast.
Yeah. Well, nobody's going to hear this. Anyway. Well, God, Tyron, it's been so fun, man.
Thank you.
And
Manny.
Yeah.
Thank you,
pleasure's
sir.
Pleasure's all mine.
And as always on the Troubled Men Podcast, what do we say, Manny?
Trouble never ends.
But the struggle continues.
Good night.
Friday night, 12-pack. Me and my partners are kicking back. Tide is high and the wind is low. Got some bullshit turned on. Up ahead, I see the light. Everybody's there tonight. 'Cause this is what you give me every time that you hear me playing the song. It's not just the faces that I see. We all grew up under this sun. She gives us spaces to be free. This is the life until it's done. Oh, we're getting counseled with the Couillon. From ballet to Fouchon. Where the water gets high and so do I. You know we're doing just fine. Take my lady to the fiddle though. Dance all night, they may be tired to go. You know life is good, you know it should be. On Louisiana time, a Louisiana time. So many places that I've been, so many faces to see again. So many memories are telling me I gotta make it back home. So many things that we share, you hear it playing in the air. And the lady I call baby's in the kitchen making something, got her high heel boots on. And all my dreams become invincible. 'Cause when I think of her, she's mine. My hesitation's indefensible. Louisiana, you're my life. Oh, we can gossip with the Couillon. From Barry to Fouchon. Where the water gets high, so do I. You know we're doing just fine. Take my lady to the Federal Door. Dance all night, they play the title code. You know life is good, you know it should be.